Okay, we're beginning here on the bottom of Kufyud Bet Amud Bet, 4 lines from the bottom. Rav Mari bar Ochel, Imlach le basar shkuta, badei basar treifa. They had salted meat, but part of it was meat that was kasher, and then part of it was meat that was a treifa. So the question is there leaching between the two pieces of meat, which then would cause problems? Atak le made the robot, so he brought the case before Rav Amalei. He's brought the drasha from the pasuk in Vayikud Aleph, hat meim. Lachem le'esor tziran ve'rodvan v'kipah shalehen. Hatmeim comes to teach you that the din does not just apply to the basar of the animal, but those things that are restricted include the tziran, which is like the liquid or the brine that exuded by the trefa. Rodvan is the gravy, v'kipah shalehen. Rashi over here says, firma, basar v'tavlin anikfe b'shuleach deira. It is the meat and the spices that coagulate at the bottom of the pot. Although the Balei Tosafot over here say, Haya Yecholiot ben firma ben tavlin, it can be either of those things, pieces of meat and the spices at the bottom. But Mio Loyalo Mar Nikpe, he doesn't have to say that it became coagulated or hardened at all. Tosafot says with regards to Atmeim, even though earlier on in the Masechta we spoke about this with regards to a number of items, Tosfot here mentions his position from back there, which is drasha gmurahi gavei shratzim ubeima. This drasha is a full-fledged drasha when it comes to shratzim and to ubeima. Chutz migavei dagim, but by fish it's not a full-fledged drasha. And Tosfot repeats that over here to say that in this case where we're speaking about basar beima. This is a real drasha, so this is a din de'oraita. In addition, he says, why do you need this drasha at all? Because we have a principle of tam ki ikar. Anytime you have flavor is as if the item itself was there. So then why do I need a pasuk to tell me tziran rodvan v'kipa shalehem arasurin? So Tosfot says in the end that v'yesh lamar, the ikar drasha, lo itzrich ala the tziran. The major part of the drasha is for the tzir. And everything else is just a hint to in the pasuk, but it's not a real drasha because you would get those from tam ki ikar. And siran, which is something that you might have thought was what's called mohel, just something that's liquid that comes out that's not real, it's just a zeya, just the sweat of the item, similar to the way that the Gemara speaks about fruit juices coming out of the fruit, that they're not the real substance of the fruit. You might have thought that the tzir over here with regards to the basar, or the sheretz, would not have that status. So that would be the chiddush. That's one way to view it. The other way he says, Zinami, itzrich nami rodvan v'kipa v'shminin de machui kemamash. Or even if you say that rodvan and kipa, you don't need them for tam ki ikar, you might need them to teach you that something that is crushed, something that is totally dissolved, has the same din as if the item was extant over there. And that's what it's teaching you, that rodvan v'kipa shalahan, even though they're not in there, quote-unquote, natural state, they still are asurim. You have here basar shkuta and basar treifa, and it seems to be that the problem that is caused over here is that there's leaching from the basar treifa into the basar shkuta because of the fact that they were salted. And therefore the Gemara asks, v'leim elemi di Shmuel, why does Rava need to bring in this breita versus the din of Shmuel, the Amar Shmuel? Meliach arehu keroteach. Something that is salted is the equivalent of being heated up. Bekavush, and something that is pickled, arehu kemivushal, as if it has been cooked. Meliach arehu keroteach. The Gemara was midayek earlier, that if the second half is about mivushal, that means that meliach is something else. So the Gemara over there said it's keroteach tzli. It's like roasting it on the fire. So salting is the equivalent of roasting. That's what leads. We've noted this many times through the Rabbeinu Tam's Shita, that you can also salt livers just like you can roast them. The other Rishonim don't believe that, but the Rabbeinu Tam believes if roasting works for livers, then salting should work based on this position over here, that Meliach Hariyuk Kuroteach Shel Tzli. V'kabush Shariyuk Mibushal means if something is soaking, pickled in a liquid, then it is Kimibushal. The question of what that liquid is, Rashi says all the time that it's a chometz, it's vinegar, and Rashi seems to think that's the only thing that creates this pickling, is putting it into something like vinegar. Other Rishonim, based on the Gemara Pesachim that speaks about soaking meat in milk, and saying that the Torah is mechadesh, that that's not a problem, but it seems to indicate that it would have been a problem of kavush, which means that even in milk, there is a problem of kavush. So they believe that other liquids also have that same status for pickling. Although you could answer on behalf of Rashi that milk, after a certain amount of time of sitting, curdles or has a pungency to it that simulates the effect of the vinegar. Although, in the end, when we pass on halacha, what the Rishonim do is split between the liquids. By vinegar, you just need the amount of time it would have taken for it to cook in a hot substance. Whereas by other liquids, you need it to sit for a minimum of 24 hours in order for it to be classified as pickled. But that's the din of Shmuel. The Gemara over here is saying, why didn't Rava just bring in this din of Shmuel? Meliach hari ukaroteach. If salting is like heating it up, then if you have basar shchuta and basar shreifa, they're next to each other, now you've salted them, they've been heated up together, there's flavor transfer. That should have been in of itself sufficient to tell you the din. Now the Baal Tosfot are bothered by that because you're asking why Rava didn't bring Shmuel instead of a Braita? Of course, Braita is a much better source and a much better proof to the position than Shmuel. So why is the Gemara questioning why did he bring the Braita and not Shmuel? So Tosfot says, Ava gav the Braita adifa, but Braita lachud lo sagi. The Braita in of itself is not sufficient. Ela mikoach milta de Shmuel. It's only together with the din of Shmuel does the Braita help you over here. Ava b'd Shmuel lachud sagi. Had you just brought Shmuel, it would have been enough. So what he says is that the Braita tells you that the Tmeim includes not just the basar itself, but anything that's exuded by the basar, the tzir, the rotev, the kippah, all of those things are also a serin. But you still don't have the mechanism for flavor transfer. What that is Shmuel's din. That when you salt it, then there is the equivalent of heating it up, and that's the method for flavor transfer. So the braita by itself is not sufficient. Given that you need that din of Shmuel, then why don't you just quote Shmuel from the outset and just say, Shmuel says, Meliach hari ukaroteach, and then you know the answer to the question. So to that, the Gemara answers, if it was Shmuel's din, I would have thought, that's only true about blood. But when it comes to tzir and rotev, maybe that would not be the case. Meaning that dam, blood, is unique in its ability to transfer flavor, to move from one thing to the other. Therefore, you can't assume just because you know the din of Shmuel, you know the other din. The tzir, Rashi says, is zeyahu. It's just sweat. Below mitzar. And it doesn't become a sur. And over here, you don't have to worry about the blood, the menukavu. It was done in a pot that had holes in it, then it's not a problem. Meaning that as long as you're salting the item and there's a drainage area for it, then the draining of the blood will take care of the problem. And dam is not a problem either because dam mishak sharik or because kibalo pach poto. So we discussed this in the previous dapim, whether you can stack pieces on top of each other. That's determined by whether there's an ability for the blood to drain out. If there are holes in the pot and it drains out, it's not a problem. If it sits there, then it creates a problem. So over here where it's draining out, the blood's not an issue. The only question is the tzir an issue? And that goes back to what was discussed before with regards to dam. Maybe dam is unique in the fact that it doesn't cause a problem because of the fact that it's misrak shurik. It glides off. It slides off. It doesn't get absorbed. There are properties of blood that we saw before when you grill things on a spit or you put them together that blood isn't absorbed into the item. Over here, we're saying that it is being absorbed because it's tzir. That's the idea here that the chiddush of the braita is that tzir has different properties than dam. And maybe the havami would have been that Shmuel Zim might have been said by blood because of its unique properties, but maybe tzir would not have those properties. The Kamash Malan is the tzir is what causes the problem over here, because tzir has a different characteristics than blood, and it does cause flavor transfer, and it is problematic over here. Kamash Malan, that tzir is problematic over here. Meitave, dag tohor, shemelcho im dag tameh. You salted a kosher fish along with a non-kosher fish. Whether the fish are actually touching over here is not clear. It could be that they're not touching, but because they're in close proximity, there's a flow between them. Or it could be that there's actually physical contact between them. That's a machloket rishonim. The Ran suggests that they're not touching. Other rishonim suggest that they are touching. But over here, the Breita says that if you have a dag tohor that was salted together with the dag tameh, mutar, then it's totally fine. My lab, what is the scenario here? Seyushneim meluchim. They're both salted. Now that mitave is a question on what we saw yesterday in Rav Nachman's din, which is dagim v'ofot, shemilchan zeim zeh. If you have fish and chicken that were salted together, they are surim. And Rav Nachman's position was premised on the fact that the nature of the fish and the skin of the fish is different, and therefore it's more absorptive and it takes in that which is next to it or what other flavors that are existing in the pot or the area that's being salted. So if that is true, then over here where both the kosher and non-kosher fish are salted, then why isn't the kosher fish absorbing from the non-kosher fish? If the fish skins or the fish flesh is able to absorb, then in this scenario you should have the same problem that you had with the fowl and the fish, you should have here with the non-kosher and kosher fish. So that's the nature of the Gemara's question here. We have a braita that seems to go against that position of Rav Nachman from yesterday. Gemara says, though, "Gon she'a tahor maliach b'tamei tafel." It's a case where the kosher fish is salted and the non-kosher fish is unsalted. So over there, the item that's leaching flavor is the kosher fish, because the salt is pulling that out, or the flavor or the liquids from the kosher fish. The non-kosher fish isn't doing anything because it's not salted, and therefore it's not kiroteach. It doesn't have that sense of being heated up or causing the liquids or transference, and that's why it's okay. Mar says, how can you say that? Bahamik Dani Seifa, since the latter half of the Braita says, and over here you can see in the Masorah Shas, the alternate pierce over here, Hayat Tohor Meliach B'tamei Tafel Mutar, that if the Tahor was salted and the Tamei was unsalted, then it is Mutar. There it's explicit in the next piece of the Braita, a case of the Tahor salted and the Tamei not salted, B'chlal D'Reisha B'shneim Meluchim Askina. Then it implies that the case before was not that case. It was a different case where they're both salted. And again, that would present a problem for Rav Nachman. My answer is Purushe Gamifarish. It is explaining. The Reisha is a case. And then the Seifa is telling us what is the case that was mentioned in the Reisha, which is Tahor, Shemekhom Dab Tameh, a kosher fish that is salted together with a non-kosher fish. Mutar, that's fine. Keitzad, what exactly is the scenario? Shaya, Tahor Meliach, V'tameh Tafel. That's the next line in the Braita, which is the kosher fish was salted and the non-kosher fish was not salted. Hachanami Mistavro, that makes a lot of sense. The Isak Adatva Reisha Shnehem Meluchin. If you tell me that the first case in the Braita is a case where they're both salted, Hashta Shnehem Meluchim Shari, if the first case in the Braita says when they're both salted, it's fine, Tahor Meliach, V'tameh Tafel, Miboi, then in the case where the Tahor has the salt on it and the Tameh has nothing on it, then you need to tell me anything? Imishumha, if that was your proof, lo iria. That's not decisive here, because Tanaseifa leguye resha. Because if you didn't have the latter case, you wouldn't know what the first case was in the Braita. Talo teima resha tor meliach v'tameh tafel. Don't think that the first case in that Braita is the kosher fish is salt and the non-kosher fish is not salted. Aval shneem luchim asur, but had they both been salted, it would have been asur. Tana Seifa, that's why the next case in the Braita comes to teach you, Tor Meliach V'Tamei Tafel, to tell you, Michlau, the Reisha Shneim Luchin, that the first case is different, or differentiated from that case, and they're both salted there. Fafilu Achi Shari. And nevertheless, it is Mutar. That in and of itself is not a proof, but nevertheless, we do have a way to dismiss this Braita by saying that the second case in the Braita is identical to the first case, which is the first case just gives a generic statement. The second case is telling you what that case was. Now, we don't have definitive proof that that is the case. We can't just say, oh, if it said Shneim Luchim, you wouldn't need the second case. That's because the Gemara says, without the second case, you wouldn't know what the first case is. So that's not definitive proof, but we can explain away the Braita and not have it be a problem for Rav Nachman. Now, the Gemara moves on and says, Tashma, mi seifa de seifa. What about the third case in that Braita? The latter of the latter part of that Braita. V'mayatamei maliach. If the non-kosher fish was salted, but the tahor tafel, and the kosher fish was unsalted, asur, that is problematic. Now there, that makes sense, because the tamei fish is the one that's quote-unquote heated up. It's also the one leaching all the liquids because of the salt. And the tahor fish is the recipient of all of that, and that's what causes the problem over here. So now the implications of that are, tamei meliach, the tahor tafel hud asur. Only when the non-kosher fish is salted, and the kosher fish is unsalted, that's the time it's asur. Hashneim meluchim, the implications from that would be, if they were both salted, Shari, it would be Mutar Legamre. Because you said the Braitha didn't address it. So now you have this latter case, which seems to imply that this is Asur, everything else would be Mutar. But it says, no, I did it on a Reisha. Well, because the earlier case was Tahor Maliach, but Tamei Tafel, so it just gave you the opposite case in the latter part. Tana Nami Seifa, that's why in the latter part of the Braitha, it gives you Tamei Maliach, but Tahor Tafel. But Enoch Hanami, Shnehem Luchim would have the same din, and they'd also be Asurim. So since we can read the Braitha in that manner, again, it's not Mukhrak to read it in either way, we don't have a proof against Rav Nachman, but we also don't have a proof for Rav Nachman, but the Braitha itself will not be a problem for Rav Nachman, which is why the Gemara brought it in the first place, to question this view that fish have a different character trait than fowl or meat because of the fact that they're more absorptive. Now, Tosfot over here says something which is not agreed to by all of the Rishonim, which is the case where it's Tahor Maliach, Mitamei Tafel, in the case where the Tahor is salted and the Tamei is unsalted, it says Mutar. And Tosfot says over here, Gabi Maliach Kiroteach, when it comes to salt being like heating up the item, Lo Shayach Lo Ila Gavar, Lo Tata Gavar, we don't invoke these principles, which are whether the item on top or the item on the bottom is more powerful, Bafilu klipa lo boi. And you don't even need to take off a layer, a thin layer on top. So here, Tosafot claims when it says mutar in the Braita, means mutar legamre. That kosher fish is totally fine. You don't have to remove anything from the kosher fish. Then he says, v'yeshli mod mikan. He says, from here you can infer, de'in tzarich la'gil duvuseg vinot ovdei kochavim. That you don't have to kosher the forms that the non-Jews make their cheeses in. Mutar la'sopem vinot l'Israel. And you can make kosher cheeses in those forms. Ula mochan betocham. And salt them in there. Means salting the cheese to put it in there to make the salty cheese. Davikmo tahor meliach v'tamei tafel. Because the equivalent of the kosher item being salted and the tamei item being unsalted. Dein shayach melicha be'etz. Because there's no such thing as salt inside of wood. I mean, if the forms are made out of wood and then the non-kosher cheese was made in there, once you've cleaned them out and the non-kosher cheese is no longer there, then when you put the kosher cheese in, the problem would be the flavor that's embedded in the wood. But since you have the new cheese be salted, the kosher cheese be salted, and the wood itself, even though it has flavor in it, it can't be classified as being salted because there's no salt inside of there. It's just the flavor that was imparted there. Then it's the equivalent of the kosher fish being salted and the non-kosher fish having nothing. And there we said it was mutar legamre. So similarly over here, when you make the kosher cheese in there and you salt the kosher cheese, it will not absorb flavor from the walls of the eitz because the eitz is tafel. It's a non-salted substance. Lo nase eitz roteach yedei melicha. And therefore the wood itself doesn't become quote-unquote heated up because of the salt of the cheese that's in it. So just because you salt the wood doesn't mean it's kiroteach, that it's hot. So therefore, the item might be quote-unquote hot, but the pot or the item that stores the tam never gets heated up. And therefore, the meliach never draws any flavor out of the pot itself. And because of that, you wouldn't have a problem. Or it's equivalent to these cases here. We have something that's salted and something that's not salted, that there's no transference of flavor into the salted item. That's one kula that comes out of this. The second thing he mentions is, umasim b'choyom, the melach b'kara, shemishamshim ba'basar. We have a fleshik pot or a fleshik utensil, and we store salt in the fleshik utensil. And we use that salt for milchik products. How can we do that? Salt sitting in a fleshik item. Technically, if you say salting makes it hot, then it should be absorbing the flavor from the fleshik dish. So that if it's a fleshik dish that it's absorbing from, then how can you take that salt and put it into a milchik substance? So Tosafot says it's the same reason over here. That when you have salt in the item, it's equivalent of the item outside being salted and the kli itself not getting hot and not having salt in it or being tefel, unsalted, and therefore there's no flavor transfer. Although he says, v'machmir tavolo v'abracha, that it's a good idea to be machmir for it, but he says, based on our Gemara and the Tosafot's assumption that in this scenario here, between the kosher and non-kosher fish, there's not even a need for klipa, not even a removal of anything, then anytime you have an item that's salted, the other item is unsalted, then the salted item is leaching, the non-salted item is not leaching, and therefore that salted item is fine. And that goes towards the cheese, the kosher cheese, and the non-kosher forms. as well as the salt sitting in a plastic utensil. Amar Shmuel, ein basar yotzei midei damo, elim kein mocho yafeh yafeh, umedicho yafeh yafeh. In order for the dam to be taken out of the meat, so that the meat is now kasher, you have to have good salting, mocho yafeh yafeh, very well salted, umedicho yafeh yafeh. And you also need to rinse it off very well. Itmar. Rav Huna amar moleach umediach. Rav Huna says that you salt it first, rinse it afterwards, or wash it off afterwards. B'matnita tano, in the Braita we have it, mediach umaleach umediach. You have to rinse, wash first, then you have to salt it, and then you have to rinse and wash again. Below plige. And there's no machloki between them. Ha, dechalalei beitabcho. As Rashi says of here, kol rechitzata basar, anytime you wash meat, mitergamina and chibul, that's called chibul, and interesting enough, that might connect somewhat to the halal meat. So ha lechalalei beitabcho, if in the butcher shop they already washed it down when they shechted it, ha delo chalalei beitabcho, or the case where the butcher shop didn't do that. So in the time of the shechita, if they already washed the animal or the meat down, then when you bring it home, all you need to do is salt it and wash it. On the other hand, if they didn't do that first stage by the butcher shop when they checked with the animal, you need to do the first stage now, which is the rinsing or washing it down, then salt it, and then wash it again. What's the reason you need to wash it beforehand? And what's the reason you need to wash it afterwards? Afterwards seems a little more simple, which is that the salt is drawing the blood out of the meat, and therefore now you want to wash off the salt that contains the blood inside of it. Now, even though technically it may not be negdarik blood anymore because it's been captured in the salt and therefore it doesn't have a din of blood, nevertheless, either we worry about that, imparting flavor or the blood inside of it, or that the salt drew blood to the surface, which is now parush. Dam evarim, or dam that's encapsulated in the basar, is not problematic. It's only when the blood's leached out that it becomes problematic. So if you didn't kasher the meat, when you start to cook the meat, the blood would start coming out and cause you a problem. So the salt takes care of that by taking out the blood so that when you cook it now, whatever's coming out is not classified as blood anymore. It doesn't mean it's not blood, it's just not classified as dam min haTorah. But dam evarim, when it's inside or is absorbed, is not problematic. So here where the salt is causing the leaching of that blood out of the meat, then the blood that's sitting on the surface now is problematic. That's what you want to rinse off afterwards. So why you rinse it off afterwards seems to be either to wash the salt that has the blood in it, or wash away the blood that the salt has drawn out that's still sitting on the surface. Question is, why do you need to wash it beforehand? So there's some that suggest it's to clear off the blood that came from the shechita. The time of the shechita, some blood was on the surface, and that blood either now dries on the surface or is sitting on the surface, and the salt will not take care of that blood because it's not something that's internal to the meat that the salt can pull out. It's something that's already on the surface. Some suggest that that's the reason for the hadacha up front. Others suggest that it softens the meat. When you wash it up front, that causes the meat to soften, and when the meat is softer, the salt is more effective at taking the blood out. And that might go to what you were describing, that instead of washing it up front, they soak it up front because they're trying to soften the meat in order that the salt is more effective in drawing out the blood afterwards. Right, Rav Dimi Minardo, Malach Lei B'Milcha Galalnita. That he used to salt it with this type of very coarse, thick salt, umenapetz lei. And then, after some time, he would shake it off and get rid of that salt. So it seems, and as Rashi notes over here, that he did this, lachazman mipnei shadam nivlaba, because of the blood that was absorbed into the salt. A melach daka, when you have the thinner, finer salt, ain't zarech lenapetz. You don't have to shake it out, you don't have to get it off, shehin. Netechet miatzma, because it dissolves by itself. So the thinner salt, then if you're going to rinse it off afterwards or wash it off afterwards, that's going to clean away that salt or dissolve that salt and it won't be a problem. Which then goes back to what we said before. That's likely the reason you need to wash it off afterwards is to get rid of that salt or remove the salt. When you have these coarser, thicker pieces of salt, then just rinsing it afterwards doesn't necessarily have them dissolve or get rid of them. That's why you have to not only rinse it, but he also has to be menapetz. He has to shake it off or make sure that it falls away, the thicker, coarser pieces of salt. Amar Misharshia, Eimach Zagim Dam Bibnei Me'ayim. They don't assume that there is blood in the, Rashi calls them entrails or the intestines or the stomach area, meaning that the requirement for salting is for basar, is for flesh that had blood contained in it. For some organs, the same is true, because they also contain blood in them, and you need to salt them in order to take the blood out. On the other hand, the stomach and the area of the intestines does not really have blood in them. And given that, you don't need to salt them in order to remove the blood, because there is no blood to remove. So Targuma, so first of all, they explain this on the Arkar Kasho, Umeaya, Bahadra de Kanto. So they explain that this references to the either the rectum or the large intestines. Mayaya is small intestines, or the stomach itself. Bahadra de Kanto is the coil of the colon, or maybe the cecum, the areas around there. All of those parts do not require salting. Now, the reason that they don't require salting is because these organs do not have blood in them. They might have some blood in them, but we said before, blood that's contained within an organ is not a problem. It's only when it comes out. By other organs or by other pieces of meat, the blood will come out because there's sufficient blood in there that will come out later if you don't salt it up front. By these items, since there's such little blood contained in them, that when you cook them or anything like that, that which leaches out is going to be insignificant, and therefore salting them ahead of time is not necessary. The Prima Godem even says that it's batel, that any blood that comes out is batel, and even though there's an isur to be vatel, something like chatchila, over here it's never a asur. Because while it's inside the organ or while it's inside the entrails, it is not asur. And as soon as it's emitted, it's already batel at that time. And so therefore there's no bitul of isur because there was never any isur over here. Now, the Gemara here says, ein machzikim. We don't assume there is blood. The Ramban wants to be medayik out of this, of ein machzikim dam, that there are times where you do have to worry about it. Meaning that if it does show a reddish tint to it, or it does seem to show that there's more blood, then you would have to deal with it. That's number one. Number two is that it would only require salting on the outside and not the inside. And for that reason, as a precaution, we salt the intestines and all of these items, even though the Gemara says we don't need to, we salt them on the outside as a precautionary measure, just in case there's some dam or there's some problem with them. But it's so basically a chumrah. Now, Tosafot says over here, if this is true, maybe you shouldn't be able to salt the kishkas along with the remainder of the basar of the animal. Because we said before that the reason you can salt two pieces of meat together is because they're both busy exuding, disgorging the blood in them. Since they're so busy disgorging, they can't absorb the blood. But that assumes that both pieces of meat are working simultaneously and doing the same thing. But if the entrails or the kishkas don't have this property, then they're not exuding. If they're not exuding, then maybe if you salt them together with basar, they're going to start absorbing the blood that's coming off the other piece of meat. So maybe they shouldn't be able to put together. So he says that's not the case. He says it's different here with the intestines for two reasons. One is blood is something that glides off or slides off and it doesn't get absorbed. And number two is the kishkas are very different in nature than the fish. The fish, before Rav Nachman said, it's a soft skin and a soft flesh and it absorbs. Over here, that's not true of the kishkas, and therefore they're not absorptive for that reason. But he says, I would not be willing to be matir because of this idea that blood glides off, it doesn't get absorbed, if you start pouring blood on the meat while it's being roasted. The damka dama niflat nofel imatsir. It's only the blood that is exuded or disgorged by the piece of meat that then drips off with its sear, with the other liquids that come out, by roasting or through salting. But if you're going to put outside exogenous blood in there, that's not going to work, and then you would have a problem. And that, in essence, is what Tosafot said 2 days ago with regards to the liver, that the liver has excess blood. Since it has so much blood, there you might have a problem that is different than putting two pieces of meat together. Two pieces of meat, even though one's above the other and it's dripping on the other piece of meat, it's a limited amount of blood. And since the tzliya and the exuding is taking place, that blood glides off, it's not a problem. The liver that has so much blood and is basically bringing a torrent of blood on top of the piece of meat, below it, that's going to cause you a problem. And similarly over here, if you're pouring blood on top of it, you can't assume that the tzliya is going to take care of it. Those of us just making one point about the fact that the intestines, so on and so forth, can be salted together with meat and we don't have to worry about it. And number two is that this idea that blood glides off is limited to blood that is contained within those organs or within those items, not blood that's added from the outside or cases where there's excess blood because there's a particular organ that has a ton of blood in it. Amar Shmuel, Eimin Ichim Basar Meliach, Ela Gav Kli Menukav. This is something that we mentioned a number of times. Salt the meat, you have to put it in something that has the ability to drain. That if it doesn't have holes in it to drain the blood out, then basically you're soaking the meat in its own blood. Because you're salting the meat, it's leaching the blood out, and then it's marinating in the blood, and it's going to take that blood right back in, and you're not getting rid of it. You need a place for the blood to escape. That's either free Kli Menukav, which is you have a Kli that's open, or when you roast it, has the same impact, which is that it'll drip into the fire and burn off, and it won't return to the meat itself. Rav Sheshet Malach Le Garma Garma, he used to salt each piece of meat independently. Trey my time alone. Why wouldn't he salt two pieces of meat together? Mishum the parish mihai ubalahai, because it'll leave this piece of meat and then be absorbed by the other piece of meat. Chadnami. So then why don't you say the same thing about one piece of meat? Parish mihai gisa. Ubala hai gisa, it leaves one side of the meat, then it goes to the other side of the meat, you have the same problem. Ela lo shna. So here's the Gemara's rejection of this idea that if you have multiple pieces of meat, it's going to cause a problem. As long as the meat is busy exuding, it's discharging, disgorging the blood that's inside of it, then you don't have to worry about it absorbing, even if there are multiple pieces of meat in there. In addition, you need a place to have it drain out. As long as it doesn't sit in the blood, then it won't be problematic. But if it sits in the blood, then it'll become problematic because then eventually the meat will stop exuding, disgorging, and now the blood will be reabsorbed into the meat because it'll reverse the process. So in order to avoid that, you need something to drain it out. But that means that you can use multiple pieces of meat. Just like one piece of meat, we don't say the blood moves from one side to the other side. You're also not going to say that it moves from one piece to the other piece and it'll all be draining out. And as Tosfot points out, it's mutar b'chol inyan, apapishim iniach shnia lutash nimlach tchila. Even if you put the next one on top of the first one that's been salted, can you appreciate the el, as I explained earlier? And that goes back to that machloket Rashi and Tosafot as to exactly why and how it works when you salt multiple pieces of meat on top of each other, that it's considered to be okay. But here, the Gemara makes it clear that you can salt multiple pieces of meat as long as there's drainage. Amar Shmuel Mishum Rabbi Chia, Shuver Mefrakata Shel Beima. If you break the neck of the animal, kodem shetetzei nafsha, before it dies, harizeh machbida da basar, this causes the meat to be heavy, v'gozelet abriyot, and therefore now you are engaged in theft, mavli adam be'varim, and causes blood to be locked into the limbs of the animal. So Rashi here tries to give an explanation for the statement of Shmuel, which is, when you shech the animal groans, or it has its last breath or life force that comes out of it, that groaning or that last life force causes the blood to be shot out of the animal or to be pushed out of the evarim of the animal. If you go and break its neck before that happens, then you basically stop that process. And by stopping that process now, you haven't allowed the blood to come out like it normally would shoot out in a shechita, and then that leaves blood inside the evarim. And that has multiple consequences. One of which is it's machbida basar. It makes the meat heavy. Because the meat now contains more blood in it, so it weighs more. That's gozela tabriyot. Therefore, when you sell it to people, you're really stealing from them. Because after they kosher it, the piece of meat's going to be a lot smaller than what they started with. If you let it bleed out properly, then the ratio of blood to meat would have been a certain number. Now that you didn't do it, the blood is a higher concentration in the meat. And therefore, when they kosher it, they're going to get less meat for the weight that they're buying. And that's why it's gozela tabriyot. Now, umavli dam b'evarim. And it causes the evarim to have a lot of blood in them. So now, ibailu, the question about that is, hechi kamar. How exactly is this being expressed here? Machbida de basar gozela tabriyot. The reason that the meat is heavy and you're engaged in theft or deception when you sell it to people is because mishum dam avli dam b'evarim. That's the explanation for it. Why is it that you have a problem here? Because the evarim have too much blood in them. That's what's causing the problem. Halididei shapir dami. You're not going to sell it to other people. It's not a problem because it's your meat. And if you're going to shecht it for yourself, then it won't be an issue at all because you're not selling it, you're not weighing it, and that would be fine. Odilma, or maybe there are two things being said in this statement. The didei nami asur, which is, it's machbidet abazar v'gozelet abriyot, and dam be'evarim. It increases the blood in the evarim. That increase in the blood in the evarim makes it that you can't kosher it. If you salt it, it doesn't help. If you roast it, it doesn't help. There's just too much blood over here, and therefore you don't have the ability to draw the blood out. And therefore, not only would it be a sort of sell to others, it'd be a sort for you to eat it yourself. Take, the Gemara leaves it as an unresolved issue, as to whether if you accelerate the death of the animal by breaking its neck right after the shechita, before it really would have died, whether that causes a problem in terms of blood staying inside of the devarim that can't be kashered. Next Mishnah. Hamaleat of imak vinala shulchan. Someone who brings poultry, fowl on the table with cheese. In over belotase. You're not in violation of belotase. This should be obvious because even putting the meat and milk together on the table are not problematic. They all are in preventative measure to stop you from eating the basar and the chalav together. So certainly, even if you believe that basar of is asur min haTorah, still, putting it on the table will never result in a lotase. It's a violation of a din derabonan to prevent you from coming to a lotase. So Gemara says, ha ochlo over belotase. What you will be midayek if this is, putting on the table is not a violation of a lotase, but eating it would be a violation of a lotase. That goes back to what I just said before. It's obvious that you're not violating a lotase when you put it on, because again, even pasar be'iman, chalav, it's not a lotase when you put it on the table. So why would the Mishnah tell you this? Elaim Kain, it's telling you the diuk, that there's no lotase for putting on the table, but there is a lotase for eating it together. Shmamina, basar of bechalav, deoraita. Then you would conclude from this that the Mishnah believes that fowl and milk, or fowl and cheese, are problematic min haTorah. So Gemara says, Eima malet of imagvina l'shukhan, enu bali de lotase. So another way, or the way to read the amended version of the Mishnah, is to say that the diok is not from the fact that there's no lotase, therefore implying that when you eat it together there is a lotase, but rather the statement is telling you will never come to a lotase. Even if you put the poultry, the fowl, on the table with the cheese, it will never come to a lotase. Even if you ate it together, it wouldn't be problematic. And that's the way to read the Mishnah, and then it avoids the diok of saying that poultry or fowl with cheese is an isur d'oraita. Basar be'ema Torah, b'chalav be'ema Torah, asur levashel, basur ba'ana'a. The isur of basar bechalav is only true when you have a kosher animal and a kosher animal's milk. When you mix them together, then you get basar bechalav. That is asur to cook together. And if it is cooked together, it's obviously asur bechalav, but also asur bechana'a. Basar be'ema Torah, bechalav be'ema t'me'a. You have a kosher animal's meat with a non-kosher animal's milk, basar be'ema t'me'a, or a non-kosher animal's meat, bechalav be'ema Torah, with a kosher animal's milk. Mutar levashel umutar ba'ana. You can cook them together, and you can get hana from them. There's no isur of basar bechalav. Isur of basar bechalav is when it's kosher and kosher. Without that, you don't have basar bechalav. So yes, the item that you're cooking together is not going to be kosher, but that's already known because you have a non-kosher animal or non-kosher milk. But there's no isur of bishul. Bishul is only restricted when it's basar bechalav. And secondarily, there's no isur hana. And for the rabbanon who believe that oath is also included midoraita, they would say it by an of kasher with milk of a beimak shira would have to be put together in order to be in violation of basar bechalav. Rekiva omer, chayav of einam min haTorah. When it comes to wild animals and fowl, they are not asur min haTorah. Shenamar, because the pasuk says, lo tevashel gedi bechalei bimo gimom pa'amim. It's found once in Parshat Mishpatim, once in Parshat Kitisa, and then once in Parshat Re'eh, the three times that it's mentioned in the Torah, Prat, Bechaya, Ulaof, Ubeimat Me'a. Each one of them comes to exclude another case. One comes to exclude a Chaya, another one comes to exclude an Oaf, and the last one comes to exclude a non-kosher animal. And therefore, Rabbi Akiva comes to the conclusion that Chaya v'Oaf, when mixed together with milk or cheese, are only Asurim Midorabanan, not Asurim Midoraita. Biosia Glide Omer, Nemar, the Pasuk in Dvarim says, Lo tuchlu kol nevela, and right afterwards it says, Lo gadashel gedi bichalei vimo. Etche ashtur mishum nevela, asur levashel bichalav. That which can become a nevela, then is restricted against basar bichalav. Oaf, shashtur mishum nevela, yocho ye asur levashel bichalav. Oaf would then qualify. Oaf can be nevela. Oaf can be nevela, then it should be asur bichasar bichalav. Tamalomer bechalei vimo. Yatzov shein lo chalei vim. It says the mother's milk. Poultry or fowl don't have mother's milk So since poultry or fowl don't have mother's milk, then they're not subject to the Isser of Lo Tevashel Gidi Bechalei Vimo. So even though technically oaf would have been included here, it's excluded because it's missing the other part of the Pasuk of Chalei Vimo. But seemingly the difference between Rabbi Yosef Halevi and Rabbi Akiva would be whether Chaya is included. According to Rabbi Akiva, Chaya is excluded. Whereas for Rabbi Yosef Halevi, Chaya can be Nevela, does have Chalei Vimo, and therefore would be included Midoraita. Oaf, they both agree for different reasons. Rabbi Akiva says Oaf is excluded because of Lo Tevashel Gidi is a Miut. Whereas Rabbi Yosef Halevi says it just fails because there's no Chalei Vimo. Therefore it's not subject to Lo Tevashel Gidi Mechalei Vimo. Minahane Milei. How do we know that Lo Tevashel Gidi Mechalei Vimo means kosher animals with kosher milk and excludes other items? Amar Rabbi Lozar Makra, the Pasuk says, Vayishlach Yehudah Gidi Aizim. And the Maset Tamar, it says that he sent to her a Gidi Izim. Kan Gidi Izim. That implies that when it tells you Gidi Izim, then it's telling you in particular that it's speaking about a goat. Hakom Makom Shener Gidi Stam. That means when it generically says Gidi, Afilu Parah Rachel B'mashma. Means any kosher animal. What it's pointing out here is, if Gidi meant a goat, then why would you have to tell me a Gidi Izim? That's like saying goat, goat. So obviously that means that Gidi doesn't mean goat. Gidi must have a more generic meaning. And so it's saying that the Torah, when it uses Gidi, means kosher animal. Izim tells you what type of kosher animal it is. The fact that it's specified it by the case of Tamar and Yudah tells you that in the other cases where it's just the generic Gidi, that includes Parah Rachel B'mashma, and that's why our Mishnah says any kosher animal is subject to Basar B'chalav. Where it says, V'leilef Minei. Why doesn't that become paradigmatic in nature? You should say that Gidi Izim, in that case by Yudah V'tamar, tells you that the word Gidi in other places means Gidi Izim. Mar says, Ketiv Krachrina. So I have another case where it does that. It says, Ve'orot Gidi Ha'izim. And the skins of the Gidi Ha'izim, that's by Rivka and Yaakov, where she's dissecting the Gidi Izim in order to prepare for the meal for Yitzchak, and then she puts the skins on the arms of Yaakov. Kan Gidi Izim. Ha'alkom makom shenemer Gidi Stam. Afilu parav Rachel v'mashma. So again, they make the same diuk. Over there, it tells you Gdi Zim. And therefore, the Gdi, when it's specified as an A's, is an A's. Otherwise, it's not. And therefore, when it says Gdi Stam, it means any kosher animal. Where it says, V'leilef Minei. So let that be paradigmatic in nature and teach you that anytime it says Gdi, it means Izim. Havalo shnei ktuvim abayim kechad. You now have two psukim that are exceptions to the rule. Everywhere else it says Gdi. Here it says Gdi Zim. They don't teach. They become the exception rather than the paradigm. If it wanted to teach you a paradigm, it would have said it once. The fact that it says it twice tells you that it's not a paradigm. These are the exceptions to the rule. That works well according to one who says that when you have two psukim saying the same thing, they can't teach. There's another view that they do teach. But if you have three times it doesn't teach, then what are you going to say? Tremi utek tive. There are two miutim over here. Izim, ha-izim. Meaning that each one of them is a miut. They're telling you that this is uniquely associated with this case, but it's not the generic or the general way to learn this item. First of all, the Balikos will point out that in the story of Yehuda and Tamar, as well as the story by Rivka and Yaakov, there the word gedi izim is mentioned multiple times. So then, if you need three times, we have it. We have it any number of times you want it. We have it because it's mentioned not just once. So Bali does what say, Elo kohanu derivka chashivu kechad, kein hanu deyuda v'tamar. Each of those stories, even though they're mentioned multiple times in the story, it's the reference to the same item. And therefore, they're all counted as one and not counted as multiple items. It's a little bit difficult because other places in Shas, the Gemara counts every mention of the word as being a separate manifestation. Over here, he's saying, oh, all of them is one story. And then, izim ha-izim, he says, tema b'chad miyuta sogi. Why do you need two miyutim over here? B'chein l'kaman b'sof pirkin gabi tshumat ha-deshen. Says, I don't understand why you need izim ha-izim. If you just have one miyut, that would tell you that this is not the paradigm. Why do you need two miyutim to tell you that this is not a paradigm? Those of all leaves that as a question mark on the Gemara here as to why it says there are two miutim over here. Amar Shmuel, Gidi, the rabot et achilev. Gidi, the rabot et ameta. Gidi, the rabot et ashalio. So now, Gidi would imply a kosher behema. And a kosher behema, together with milk, would have been problematic. Shmuel says that it says Gidi three times. Each one of the times it mentions gedi, it's an inclusionary term to teach you. Chelev, the fats of a kosher animal cooked together with milk, basar bechalav. In essence, you're going to be in violation of two isurim. If you eat chelev together with milk, you're going to be in violation of chelev, and you're going to be in violation of basar bechalav. Gedil rabotet ameita, that even if it is a kosher animal, but it was a nevela, it would still be a problem of basar bechalav. So once again, if you eat that nevela with the chalav, you're going to be in violation of both nevela and basar bechalav. When we're saying behema Torah, it doesn't mean necessarily just the basar of the behema Torah that was shechted. It means any kosher animal, even though now it wasn't shechted, it's a nevela, as well as the fact that the other parts of the kosher animal, the chelev, the fats are also included over here. Gedi, the rabot et ha-shalil. The gedi also includes the fetus that is inside. That also has a restriction of basar bechalav. Now, gedi, otzi et ha-dam. The gedi one time comes to include one item, but exclude another item. It comes to exclude blood. Blood that's asur to eat, but is not classified as basar, and therefore it doesn't have a din of basar bechalav. Gedi, otzi et ha-shalil. To tell you that even though the fetus is included, the placenta is not included in the Yisur Basar B'chalav. Gdi lo tzei atatzmeya. And Gdi comes to teach you non-kosher animals are also excluded. So he has the word Gdi in each instance, teaching you that one thing is included, meaning that the Gdi or the necessity for Gdi is teaching you that one thing is included and one thing is excluded. Now, B'chalevimo. So B'chalevimo three times. One time to teach you lo B'chalav Zachar. That's true of a milk of a female, not true of the milk of a male. So if the male, for whatever reason, has milk, then that milk is not problematic. B'chalev imo, below chalev shchuta. Chalev imo means milk that has been nursed from the mother, not milk that is contained inside the mother that is shechted. That goes back to what we discussed earlier about the udder. Milk that's in the udder is considered to be not milk, midoraita, and therefore it's not going to be subject to basar b'chalav, midoraita. B'chalev imo, below b'chalev t'meya. B'chalev of the mother, meaning the gdi's mother, which is a kosher animal, and not a non-kosher animal. There are six things that are mentioned by gdi, and three things by chalev imo. Where it says, it's very interesting, but ha'atlat gdi k'tive. V'anan shita darshina. You just have the word gdi is repeated three times, and you just gave us six drashot from it. I made it sound good, because I said, oh, inclusionary terms and six exclusionary terms. The truth is, that every time he's using the gdi for two different things. How does he do that? Kasavar Shmuel, Isur Chalal Isur. That you can't have Isur Chalal Isur. Isur Chalev Umeita Michad Kra Nafke. And therefore, the Chalev and Dam come from a single pasuk. Rashi over here is very bothered by the Girsa, and he says he doesn't think it makes sense. He says, V'nira Be'enai, Delo Gersin and Lahai Kasavar Shmuel Isur Chalal Isur. This has nothing to do with Shmuel's position with regards to Isur Chalal Isur. That's not the reason over here. If Isur is Chalal Isur, Torah Rashi says, I don't need any of these inclusionary terms. The Chalav and Meita have a problem, which is Chalav is already Asur before you made it into Basar B'Chalav. Nevela is Asurah before you make it into Basar B'Chalav. So the problem is Ein Isur Chalal Isur. If you say Isur Chalal Isur, then I don't need any inclusionary term. Then automatically Basar B'Chalav will just lay on top of Chalav. Basar b'chalav would lay it on top of nevela. So then why do I need any pasuk whatsoever? That's what's bothering Rashi. Therefore, Rashi eliminates from the girsa over here, Isur Chalal Isur. Has nothing to do with Shmuel holding Isur Chalal Isur, but rather, Chad pasuk. You, from one gedi, you can include both chalav and nevela. It's telling you the same thing. It's saying, even though normally, ain't Isur Chalal Isur, in this instance, Isur is Chalal Isur. Basar b'chalav does devolve upon the other Isurim. Doesn't matter if the Isur is Nevela, doesn't matter if the Isur is Chalev. It will devolve upon either one of them, and therefore you need one Pasuk in order to teach you that. And that's what Rashi says over here. The Kulo Tzlata Gedi Miyatre the Drusha. All three of the words Gedi are extraneous. And Chara the Chalev Umeita. Isur Chalal Isur, Vidravelu Tarvayu, Damin Gedihim. One of them is now being used to teach you that. They're both types of a Gedi, and they're included from one inclusionary term. B'chad ha-shali, Leo. One of them is there to teach you about the fetus. B'chad ha-mutei t'meya. And the other one is to teach you that non-kosher animals are excluded. So that way you combine meita and chalev into one. Shalil you're using. Lo-tziyat ha-dam and lo-tziyat ha-shalya, you don't need a specific pasuk to exclude them. because you never would have included them to start with. Dam, nami lav gedihu. You don't need an exclusionary term for dam because that's not a gedi, it's not basar. And even though you still need gedi, then to exclude dam, to tell you that the dam is not gedi, Tosafot says you don't really need the word gedi, you could have written basar. Anything that's not basar would have excluded dam. So the addition of gedi above basar gives you a separate miut that has nothing to do with dam. Dam's excluded because we're talking about meat and not about dam. Shilyanami pirsha balmu. The placenta is just discard from the animal. It's not a real piece of basar. Pashlo trey. So now you have two left over, meaning that one of them you used for chelev and meita. Now the other two, chadra botet ashalil, one to say that a shalil, a fetus, is included. Now even though a fetus is negdar ke basar, meaning that you don't need me to tell you that over here, we've already learned that when you shech the mother, the basar of the shalil is included under that shechita, so why do I need a specific riboy? That might be because we've seen earlier that certain aspects of the fetus do not measure up to a normal animal. For instance, chelev. When it comes to the fats of a fetus, we had opinions earlier on that fats of an 8-month-old fetus or an 8-month-term fetus is not considered to be chelev. So you see that certain parts of the fetus do not take on the status of isurim. And so maybe over here too, it won't have a status of basar for basar bechalav. And given that, I need a riboy to tell me that it is included. And one of them to exclude a non-kosher animal. Gedi is kosher animals, not non-kosher animals. Although Tosafot says that he thinks that Rashi erased this from the Girsa unnecessarily, because he says if it really was true that Shmuel held Ein Isur Chalal Isur, then it wouldn't be possible for him to learn both of them from the same Pasuk because of his general principle of Ein Isur Chalal Isur, and therefore he would have to have each one of them be independently indicated, even though the Gemara upcoming, but pushes Rashi in this direction, is going to say that Shmuel holds Ein Isur Chalal Isur, and yet he still learns both of them out from a single Pasuk, and that's because Rashi over there says, Shnehem Gedi Heim. They're all classified as a Gedi, and that's why it works, but then why over here does it not work? And that's Rashi's problem, and that's why he takes it out of the Girsa, versus the Bali Tosafot who think that you can differentiate between the cases. The Savar Shmuel Isur Chalal Isur? Now, according to the way we have it written in the Gemara, it's because the Gemara stated before, Shmuel holds Isur Chalal Isur. Rashi says that Girsa's out, he's just saying it's implied. You're telling me now that the Pasuk's telling us that Chelev and Nevela can still have Basar B'Chalav devolve upon them. So that implies that Shmuel thinks that Yisr Chalal Yisr based on that. Barmer Shmuel Mishum Rabbi Eliezer is probably the Girsa. Minayin the Kohen Tamei. Shachal Trumat Tameya Shenu B'Mita. How do you know that a Kohen who is Tamei, who eats Truma, that is Tameya, that it's not Chayav Mita B'Dei Shemayim? Eating Truma B'Tumat Aguf results in a punishment of Mita B'Dei Shemayim. So how do I know that if you have the Truma was already Tamei before the Kohen became Tamei? How do I know there that there's no Mita B'Dei Shemayim? Shnemar, Umeitu Bo Ki Yichaluluhu. They will be subject to death, meaning Mita B'Dei Shemayim, because they profaned it. Prat Lezo Shemichulalet Ve'omedet. Excluded from that is this Trumat Meya that's already Mechulal, it's already profaned because it no longer has the status of Truma because it was downgraded because it became Tmeya. Truma Torah has an elevated status. Once it goes to Meya, it has a downgraded status. That downgraded status then makes it that it's not considered to be Chilul when the Kohen who's Tamei eats it then. But that shows you that Ein Isur Chalal Isur. Some of the Rishonim over here ask why the Gemara brought the question on Shmuel from Truma. Could you explain the reason by Basar B'Chalav you hold Isur Chalal Isur is because Basar B'Chalav is an Isur Mosif, because it adds on an Isur Hana on top of the Isur Achila that already existed by Chelev or existed by Nevela. Now then, by Truma, there is no additional Isur when the Kohen is Tamei versus when the Truma is Tameya. If that's the case, you can explain why Shmuel thinks by Truma there isn't Isur Chalal Isur, whereas by Basar B'Chalav there is Isur Chalal Isur. So if you remember, the Bali HaTosafot back on Kuf Aleph and Mun Aleph said over there that Isur Hana'ah is not classified as an Isur Mosi. And he brought a number of proofs over there to the fact that the Gemara does not consider Isur Hana'ah to be an Isur Mosi, but rather just an extension or more intense form of the Isur Achila. Therefore, Truma over here is no different than Basar B'Chalav. Just because Basar B'Chalav adds Isur Hana'ah, that doesn't make it into an Isur Mosi. And that's why the Gemara is questioning Shmuel's view with regards to Isur Chalal Isur. So, Ibai Teima, some suggest, Ba'alma Isur Chalal Isur. Generally, Shmuel believes Isur is Chalal Isur. V'shani hotam, demi et rachmano, umay tubo. And the case of Truma is unique, because there's a miut that tells you don't make Isur Chalal Isur in that case. And even though Shmuel in general holds Isur Chalal Isur, here you need a specific riboy to tell you that Basar B'Chalav will be Chalal on Chalev, because Chalev is an Isur Karet. So I need something to tell me that despite the fact that it's an Isur Karet, I still have Isur Chalal Isur. And similarly, by Nevela is not only Asur B'Chalav, but it's also Mitama. So it has a Chumrat side to it, which also would indicate that maybe ain't Isur Chalal Isur, even though in general you believe Isur Chalal Isur. And that's why I need a specific riboy over here to include both Chalev and Nevelah to Basar B'Chalav, even if in general you hold Isur Chalal Isur. Here I'll need a particular riboy to tell me that even given their Chumrot, you still say Isur Chalal Isur. Ibai Teima Ba'alma Kasar Shmol, ain't Isur Chalal Isur. In general, Shmol holds that ain't Isur Chalal Isur. B'Shani Yocha, the Rabbi Rachmana Gedi. In our case, the Torah goes out of its way to teach you that Isur is Chalal Isur because of the Gedi, which is needed in order to add it on. Ibai Teima, Hadidei Hadarabe. One of them is his own opinion, where Isur Chalal Isur. One of them is the opinion over here, where he's quoting Rabbi Eliezer, where it says Rebbe. Now, Rashi makes an interesting comment over here, which we, if you remember, saw in the Rashbam in Baba Batra, on Daf Kuf Yudalad Amud Bet. The Rashbam over there said, whenever the Gemara says Mishum, when it's in the name of, that means that that person was not his Rebbe. Meaning that when you say something over in the name of your Rebbe, you'll say, Amar Shmuel, Amar Rabbi Eliezer. That would mean that Shmuel's quoting Rabbi Eliezer directly. When it says over here, Amar Shmuel, Mishum Rabbi Eliezer, Mishum tells you that he never saw Rabbi Eliezer. He's quoting something in the name of Rabbi Eliezer, but he didn't learn it directly from Rabbi Eliezer. And Rashi goes out his way to point that out, that Shmuel never saw Rabbi Eliezer. Shmuel is a first generation Amora. Rabbi Eliezer is a post-Churban. He's one of the Talmidim of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. He's in the generation immediately after the Churban. So he's a Tana. That's 3-4 generations before Shmuel. So Shmuel never saw Rabbi Eliezer. That's why it says Mishum over here. And even though it's interesting, it says that's Shmuel's opinion. That's his Rebbe's opinion. It's not really his Rebbe. It means that Rabbi Eliezer's opinion that Shmuel is quoting, Mishum Rabbi Eliezer. But it's important to remember that Mishum, the Rashbam makes that point in Baba Batra. Rashi makes that point over here, that Mishum tells you that you never saw it. So sometimes you say, I'm Rabbi Yochanan, Mishum Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. So Rabbi Yochanan likely did not see Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. But he's saying Mishum Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai means that he's quoting something in the name of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, even though he didn't receive it directly. Alright, so now, Baimine Rav Achodvai Bar Ami, May Rav, or the other Gersa means May Rovo, Hamivashel B'Chalav Gedi Shelo Yinika Mahu. If you cook it in milk from a Gedi that never nursed, what is the din? It says B'Chalav Imo. Chalav Imo implies that it gave birth, and therefore it's a mother. So if it's a mother, then it means that there was already a birth. But we know that the udders already start to fill with milk in anticipation of the birth. What happens if it's not a mother yet, but it's already producing milk? Is that milk restricted? Because is that classified as Chalev Imo? Amalei, mid itzricha l'shmuel l'meymar b'chalev Imo v'lo b'chalav zachar. The fact that Shmuel had a drusha in the post to tell you the milk of the mother and not the milk of the male, zachar hu d'lo ati l'chalal eim. The reason the milk of a male is excluded is because it never becomes Chalev Imo. Aval hai came into bar l'chalal eim asur. But this animal, since it eventually will become an aim, that's enough to make the milk restricted, even though it's yet to become an aim. So that's the fact that Chalev Imo, we're not taking Imo so literally, we're just talking about the potential to nurse or the potential to produce milk. It's telling you the gender of the problem here and not telling you about the particular type of milk that is problematic. Itmar, Hamivashel Chalav B'Chalev. If you cook milk together with the chel of the asur fats. Rabbi Ami, Rabbi Asi. Chadamar lukeh, chadamar ainu lukeh. One of them says you get malkot, one of them says you don't get malkot. Lema b'hakam iflegei. Let us say that their malkot is premised on this. Demanda amar lukeh kasavar isur chalal isur. The one who says that you get malkot over here says isur chalal isur, therefore there's a problem with basar b'chalav over here. Chel of itself, there's no isur to cook it. The only isur is to cook meat and milk together. Well, the chalev, if it's already a sur and can't become a sur again, then cooking it together with the milk is going to do nothing, and therefore you're not going to be chayav. If you believe isur chalal isur, then the chalev, which is also negdar kibasar, then you can have basar b'chalav sit on top of the chalev, and therefore bishul will be a problem for you. And therefore you can't get the basar b'chalav. Where it says, look, the kuliyama ain isur chala isur. Achila, when it comes to eating it, the kuliyama lo plige de lo lucky. Everybody agrees that you don't get malkot. If you eat it, ain isur chala isur, you're a sur for chalev, you're not going to be a sur for basar b'chalav. Ki plige a bishul. Bishul is the question. Manda mar loke chad isurahu. By bishul, there's only one isur. There's no isur of cooking chalev. There is an isur of cooking basar b'chalav. So at the time of cooking, you really only have one isur, which is the isur of basar b'chalav. When you eat it, then there are two isurim, and then only chalev will matter. Manda mar einu loke lahochi afka rachmana lachila b'lashon bishul. The reason that you are patur over here is because the Torah says you may not eat it, but it says you may not eat it using the language of bishul, to tell you eating and bishul have the same din. It's just like achila, ain isur chal isur, there's only isur chalev. So to bishul, there's only be an isur of chalev, which doesn't exist there, and therefore you're not going to get malkot for basar b'chalav. Kevin dala achila lo glaki, since you don't get malkot for eating it, a bishul nami lo glaki. So you're not going to get malkot for bishul. Vigadamre, another way, or another version of the explaining machloket is to say, a bishul kuleyama lo pligi de loki. Because the bishul, everybody agrees, that you get malkot for that. The question is about achila. One says you don't get malkot because ain isur chala isur. So yes, for the bishul there's only basar b'chalav. Once you come to eating, there's also chalev and there's ain isur chala isur. That's why the Torah expressed the achila l'shom bishul. Came in a bishul lucky, achila nami lucky. So even though in general ain isur chala isur, over here there's a special Ribui in the pasuk that says, just like by bishul you're going to be chayav, so you're going to be chayav for achila. Vi by dema, and some suggest, mara marchada, umara chada, the lo plige. One of them was speaking about bishul, which is the one that says the loke, and one of them was speaking about achila that says lo loke, and they're not even arguing. They both agree that on bishul you get makot, on achila you don't. They were addressing different issues. One was addressing the bishul that you get makot for, one was addressing the achila that you don't get makot for. Okay, we're going to stop here. 8 lines down on the top of Kuf Yud Daled, Amud Aleph.